Got some good news to share with you today about surviving famine. I was speaking with international war correspondent and analyst Michael Yon today. And you know, I really admire the work of Michael Yon. He's incredibly well-informed and he's read all kinds of books on the history of famine and war and pandemics and so much more, and geopolitical. He knows about Asia, knows about the history of Thailand and Japan and Europe and Russia and all of it. I mean, the guy reads like crazy. And he was telling me, he said, the interesting thing, Mike, about every pandemic that's notable in history had certain local communities that survived it better than others. So in every pandemic, there are regions or local towns that do better than others. And Michael Yon was telling me about Thailand. And I think he was mentioning one specific famine in the 18th century where Thailand was struggling with a protein deficiency. And one particular leader taught his township or whatever it's called, I don't know, town, a little regional area. He taught his people self-reliance. And it was about using fish ponds and growing the right kind of grasses. And I think they grew tilapia. And it was about teaching food redundancy and also distributed food production. So decentralization of the food supply, where lots of families were growing food. Lots of people were using very efficient fish ponds to produce protein from algae and grasses and things like that. And as a result, this one township was able to survive this particular famine, I don't recall exactly what year, without any loss of life from starvation while people were dying all around in other places. And so you look at that and you say, wow, the good news is that preparing for famine through local efforts to garden and grow food and have, you know, distributed decentralized food production, this makes you resilient to famine, which kind of seems like common sense. I know it's like, well, of course, Mike, of course it would. But you don't have this mindset existing in America or in Western Europe whatsoever, except in, I guess, very local, I don't know, maybe like hippie communities or certain prepper groups and things like that. By and large, the American culture doesn't believe in a decentralized food production. What they believe in is the lowest price per pound of ground beef. Okay, that's the measure or the metric that people pay attention to. What's the lowest price of ground beef at Walmart? When the real question should be, how do I support my local farmers? You know, how do we create food infrastructure here locally? This is something that Marjorie Wildcraft always speaks about. You've got to support local agriculture. And this means also having food skills yourself so that you can contribute if necessary. You might need to provide garden seeds, or you might need to trade, you know, barter some kind of crop with somebody else who's got something different, because everybody's a specialist. So getting involved in local gardening and food production and then bartering and getting to meet the people who are involved in it, this is key to surviving it. And that was the main message of Michael Yon today in our conversation, is that, yeah, certain groups will get through this with no deaths, but the masses will suffer a lot of deaths because, of course, they don't believe in self-reliance. It's not the structure of their world. Now, I would say that never before in human history has food production been so centralized. We've never had such powerful, massive food production corporations with such monopolistic controls over the system. And on top of that, don't forget this, you also have the so-called health authorities who can come in and shut down a meat plant. And they did this all the time during COVID, just from a simple PCR test, you know, or whatever. They come in. And in fact, and you saw farming operations in California getting shut down in the same way. You know, by inspectors would come in and say, oh, well, somebody tested positive for COVID, and then just shut it all down. It's like, too bad. No salad greens going to market from this farm, you know? So you actually have centralized control or veto power over food production from the health authorities who are running junk science, fraudulent tests, you know, PCR tests, and claiming that that's the science, but it isn't. The PCR tests have zero value in actually determining if somebody is, quote, sick, from anything. The PCR can't tell you that they're sick at all. PCR can't tell you how much of something a person has in their body. And frankly, the PCR test, when it was used with COVID, basically just detecting human, you know, protein sequences, you know, human information, human cells and exosomes and things like that, fragments of human cells. So that the actual value of that in stopping a pandemic is about zero. But they used it as a lever to shut people down, lock people down, to gain compliance, to scare people, to force vaccines, which is all about depopulation and so on, as you know. But the point is that there is centralized control over the food supply in the hands of the so-called health authorities. And so when you combine that with what's happening with the central bank digital currencies, you know, the digital wallets, the coming collapse of currency and forcing people into digital wallet systems and then using that to control how much food people are allowed to buy, or having rationing and quotas and so on, then you understand the total weaponization of food and finance together and how that allows the powers that be to control people, to punish people who do not obey, and to exterminate people anytime they wish. All they have to do is cut off calories or cut off energy or cut off money, and boom, that's it, done. Most people cannot survive from that point forward because they do not have self-reliance. So again, the message from Michael Yan is, yes, we can make it through. We can live through famines. But doing so requires that we are prepared, and that means not just stored food, but food production at the local level. It's a community scale operation. It can't be just you with a bunch of cans of food and a bunch of buckets of food. Like, that's only going to last a certain amount of time. Now, granted, that gives you more time, but ultimately you're going to have to grow food, and you're going to have to live in a community where other people also grow and produce food themselves. Because if you don't have people producing food locally, eventually everybody runs out. You know, eventually you get into an emergency. And then that emergency is leveraged to control you and throw you into, you know, FEMA camps, or to limit your caloric intake, you know, with the digital currencies, things like that. So there's good news and there's bad news, right? Good news is we can make it through. Bad news is most people won't. Most people will not. They won't prepare. Most people do not understand the importance of localized production or decentralization of food, or frankly, decentralization of money or anything else, you know, decentralization of free speech, which is what my platform is all about. Brighteon, right? Brighteon.com, decentralization of free speech. We've got to have these platforms. So I'd like you to keep all this in mind when you think about how you're going to make it through this famine that has already begun. I'm telling you, 2023 and 24, much of the world, much of the population on planet Earth today will not have access to food because of fertilizer scarcity. And that scarcity stems from, you know, well, urea scarcity, nitrogen scarcity, or I should say nitrogen-based fertilizer scarcity, ammonia scarcity, and of course, natural gas scarcity, which comes back to Ukraine and Russia and the Nord Stream pipelines and all that. So you put all this together, folks, it's obvious that a whole lot of the world's population is going to face starvation over the next 2+ years. And it might be more like 5 to 10 years before things even begin to get back to normal. And by that time, I don't know how many billions are going to be left alive. I really don't. It might be a lot fewer than we have now. It always makes me laugh at these futurists that say, you know, by 2050, the population is going to be 14 billion people. No, it's not. It's 8 billion now. It's not even going to be 8 billion next year. It's going to be less next year than it is now. And it's going to be less the year after that, and so on. The population has peaked for a while. Trust me. So the number of human beings living on this planet is going to fall. It may fall to 7 billion. Maybe 6 billion, maybe 5 or 4 billion. I don't think it's going below 4, but it's going to take a while for it to climb back to 8. And the only way we get back to 8, if indeed that ever happens, is by dismantling the globalist cartel systems that are starving people to death on purpose by dismantling food and energy infrastructure. And those are the globalists, right? So either the globalists lose their power or humanity loses its future. That's all there is to it. It's really that simple. And this process may take many years to play out. So this isn't just something that's going to be next year or anything like that. This could play out over a generation, frankly. We'll see. We'll see. The bottom line is those who survive are going to be those who are prepared. And also those who reproduce, as I've said in another podcast, those who reproduce are going to be those who are unvaccinated. Because genetic viability and reproductive viability obviously means that's the future of humankind. You know, sexual reproduction. Having healthy offspring who themselves are viable and then teaching them skills. Not wokeness, but skills, right? Teach them skills. That's the future of human life on planet Earth. And frankly, those who have been like super jabbed multiple times vaccinated, they're going to die. Those who aren't prepared, they're going to die. They're going to starve to death. Many of them, not all, but many. Those who cannot reproduce because, I don't know, they engage in genitalia mutilation and they cut it all off or whatever. If they can't reproduce, they're not going to have a genetic future, you know, just not going to have a family tree from that point forward. So the changes that are coming to planet Earth are dramatic, and they begin now. This is a major pivot point of history, and we are living in that pivot point. The last 2 years, boom, massive pivot, and there's more coming because, frankly, the die-off has only just begun, all right? So I don't want to leave with bad news, so just remember the context of what I'm saying here, that as Michael Yon says, we can survive this, but we have to be prepared. And history has shown that those who are prepared do survive. Obviously, because we're still here, which means also we came from a long line of survivors. Maybe that's why we have a survivor mentality, huh? But I don't know, they beat it out of a lot of people living today by turning them into soy boys and snowflakes and, you know, woke nut jobs or whatever, but they haven't managed to get it out of us. So we're still going to be here. We're going to make it. So keep that in mind. It's good news, something good to focus on.